Champaign 90.1 FM. Coming up next is Disability Beat, so stay tuned. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Laura Hart, Special Education Rights Manager for the Illinois Guardianship and Advocacy Commission. But first, disability news for the week of October 27th, 2025. Monthly Social Security and Supplemental Security income payments are set to rise in 2026. The Social Security Administration announced a 2.8% cost of living adjustment, or COLA, to keep pace with inflation. That means the maximum SSI benefit for individuals will increase to $994 per month, up from $967 this year. Couples will receive up to $1,491 compared to $1,450 last year. The higher payments start December 31st for SSI recipients and in January for those on Social Security. Commissioner Frank Bisnano says the COLA helps benefit, quote, reflects today's economic realities, end quote. But advocates like the Senior Citizens League argue the increases are too small, and they're pushing Congress for a minimum 3% adjustment and a formula that better reflects senior spending. A new report from the Department of Health and Human Services Office of Inspector General says many private insurers running Medicare and Medicaid plans list mental health providers who don't actually take patients, creating so-called ghost networks. Investigators found that 55% of mental health professionals listed as in-network for Medicare Advantage plans were not providing care to any plan members. The rate was 28% for Medicaid managed care plans. Some providers were retired, worked elsewhere, or are no longer treating patients at all. The findings raise concerns about whether taxpayers and patients are getting what they pay for, said the regional inspector general Jody Noodleman. Quote, people seeking mental health care can be particularly vulnerable. Any roadblock can discourage them from finding help, end quote. In one example, a Medicaid plan listed a retired clinician as working in 19 different offices. Patients like Jeannie Simpkins of Arizona said the problem is real. Her family member with a disability couldn't find a rehab center that accepted her Medicare Advantage plan. The report examined 60 plans in five states and urged federal administrators to use billing data to verify network accuracy. It also recommended creating a national searchable directory of mental health providers showing which insurance plans they actually accept. Industry representatives acknowledged the issue, saying they support ongoing federal efforts to improve access to mental health care. And finally, when Stephen Brewer took his family out for dinner one evening last year, he never expected the experience would change his life. Brewer, a longtime resident of Flint, Michigan, and his wife, Mackenzie, were dining out with their sons, Theus, age 10, and Loki, age 8. Both kids are nonverbal and on the autism spectrum. When a woman at a nearby table grew irritated by the boys' noises, Brewer recalled, quote, she said it was selfish of me to let my kids act like that. I took a step back and realized maybe I am selfish to expect everyone else to deal with my children, end quote. But instead of getting angry, Brewer turned the momentum into inspiration. After finding no restaurants designed for families like his, he decided to create one himself. That inspiration became the restaurant 810 Munchies, which opened in August inside Flint's Dort Mall. The name of the restaurant was inspired by his two sons with autism, age 8 and 10. The goal, a judgment-free zone where, quote, the kids make the rules, end quote. Children can color on a chalkboard wall, write on windows, or move freely without fear of criticism. The space uses soft lighting and no loud music to avoid sensory overload. The menu sticks to comfort foods like chicken nuggets, fries, peanut butter, mac and cheese, the dishes his sons and many kids with disabilities love most. Brewer said, quote, be a good human and respect people around you. Leave your judgments at the door. I don't know how it's 2025 and no one has done this yet, end quote. And that's the news for this week.
Cheeseburger in paradise. Heaven on earth with an onion slice. Not too particular, not too precise. I'm just a cheeseburger in paradise. Heard about the old time sailor men. They'd eat the same thing again and again. Warmed in bread, they said, could raise the dead. Well, it reminds me of the menu at a holiday.
And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm excited to have as my guest today Laura Hart, who is the Special Education Disability Rights Manager for the Illinois Guardianship and Advocacy Commission, a brand new position. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
So why don't we start out by you introducing yourself and talking a little bit about the Guardianship and Advocacy Commission and the work that they do.
Excellent. Sure. My name's Laura Hart, and I started with this agency, I should have done that math before. 2016, I think so.
A while.
Working in a different department where we then identified some issues with special education. We're able to build this collaboration within the agency. Illinois Guardianship and Advocacy has three divisions. The first one is the one that most individuals are familiar with. That's the Office of State Guardian. Those are individuals who help. They're the guardian of last resort for adults with disabilities. So if the court determines that someone needs a guardian and no one is available to fill that role, then they get placed with that Office of State Guardian.
Got it.
The second area, or second division, I guess, that we have is legal advocacy services. That's legal advice and representation for both children and adults with disabilities. Most of what they do has to do with involuntary commitments to mental health facilities and representing those individuals so that they have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
But they also work in a variety of other ways as needed. And then the third division is the Human Rights Authority, and they're our investigative body, and they will investigate any potential law violation as long as we have an individual with a disability and a disability service provider. So what happened was we joined forces with Legal Advocacy Services and Human Rights Authority, and we created this special education advocacy collaboration to try to get more services and assistance out to families who are navigating special ed.
So how long has that program been in place now?
Well, we started about 2018. We started with some trainings, and the full program has been up since, of course, 2020,
mm-hmm.
because there's no better year to have started a program than that. So we've been going for about, I've been doing the special education work for a lot of years, but the program itself, the collaboration, is about 5 or 6 years old now.
So is this a statewide program then?
Yes, we have offices available across the state for the agency, the Guardianship and Advocacy Commission, and then the Special Education Collaboration staff cover the whole state. We attend anything that we need to be at virtually, so that allows us to take cases from any corner of the state that's needed.
Oh, interesting. So now that that technology is available, it makes your life a little bit easier, maybe, though being in person, I think there's an advantage to that as well, but not having to do the travel, a bonus for sure.
Yes. Yeah. It's a double-edged sword. I would like to be able to be in person and read a room and, you know, be able to support a parent that way, but I can take hundreds of cases versus tens of cases because we don't have the travel to all the different areas.
Right.
So it works, though.
Obviously, in person, or, well, in person via Zoom, but being there in a meeting is one of the, probably one of the key things that you do. Are there other objectives that you have?
Sure. So we offer services. We categorize it in like three areas. The first one is information and training. And I do a lot of that. So I offer trainings. I help attend trainings. I get parents connected to trainings through our Family Resource Center. Family Matters is in Illinois. So we help link with trainings. We answer questions. A lot of people ask a question, and when you give them the answer, they're able to go out and complete the advocacy without any support. Mm-hmm. So we offer that as one, as phase one, kind of what we're doing. Then two is the more formal advocacy. And with that part of it, that can look however a parent wants. It's why I really feel passionately that we are so successful, because I'm not going in to represent anyone. I'm not an attorney, and I don't have that ability, nor do I want to, because I want the parent to maintain the power and control in that meeting as the parent. That's their role, and I'm just there to support them. So that looks a lot of different ways depending on what they need. Most of the time we are reviewing IEPs that already exist, helping a parent understand what it says, what an evaluation says, so that they feel like they can go into the meeting confidently. A lot of parents we don't attend meetings with. They go to the meetings, and then they call me afterwards and tell me what happened, and we review what the next steps might be. In other cases, we do attend the meetings to support the parents. I tease that it's just I am there so that they can tag me in. It's mm-hmm. really hard to be a parent in that situation. I've been there.
Oh, yeah.
And so even when you know and you're anything you could know and you're super prepared, when you're the parent, it's just so hard. So however we can support them, that's what we want to do. And we try to predetermine that ahead of time so they know what to expect and make sure that they're comfortable going in. We also offer, the last area that we offer is legal services. So I am not an attorney. I'm an advocate. But we know that sometimes in order to get what needs to be done, a parent needs to utilize procedural safeguards, and that's that mediation and due process. So we do have legal staff that can help with those in those cases.
Is that pro bono, or the parents have to pay for those services?
So all of the advocacy services and information services are free. Mm-hmm. The majority of what we do with legal is also free, but we operate on a sliding scale. And then there are also, you know, court costs of some kind, not court costs, that's not what I want to say. Like fees associated with going to due process. So mm-hmm. not fees for due process, but like, let's say somebody needed to have a witness, or they needed to pay for documents, things like that. So yes and no when it comes to legal, but we try to be as low cost as possible, but that is determined when a family calls in and they do a contract, a retainer with our legal department. They talk through what all those possibilities might be.
Well, that sounds like the biggest difference between what you do and what Family Matters has traditionally done in the past. I don't think they provide any kind of legal services at all. Are they still doing advocacy?
Well, you would need to talk to them. I know they've been restructuring a little bit because of some of the funding changes throughout the federal government. So I know they've had to move some things around. And I think the goal for that program has always primarily been, you know, information and training. Mm-hmm. And I know they were trying to fill a gap with, you know, offering some advocate support. over the years, but I don't know what that will look like under the new restructuring. And correct, they don't offer any legal services.
Right, so. Right. Yeah. And but even if they did, advocacy and qualified advocates are rare to find in the state of Illinois these days. So I certainly appreciate the fact that guardianship and advocacy has moved in that direction. Do you have other people working with you on this project, or is this pretty much just you?
We have, we started off just about four of us, I want to see, plus our like administration. And now we are up to about six of us, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So we've expanded. Guardianship and Advocacy Commission does a really good job of trying to identify when our caseloads are full and when we might, you know, need to expand. And so far, we've been very fortunate to be able to do that in those moments where we've expanded quickly, much, much more quickly than we originally anticipated.
Yeah. So with the six of you, how many, roughly how many IEPs have you attended over the past, let's see, we're in October now, during this year?
Oh, easily 150 to 200 between the team.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a
lot. We do go to a lot of IEP meetings.
Yeah.
A lot of IEP meetings.
What yeah. seems to be the biggest issue for most of those IEP meetings when there is disagreement? What is the disagreement over? And I'm sure it varies.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole multitude of things depending on the situation. What I think is most helpful about what we can do is when a lot of it is not understanding the process, and that is from both the parent and from the district.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to take a very procedural approach where we're saying, okay, I mean, it's not about me as an advocate agreeing with what anyone says. My role is to make sure we're doing things in the order and the way that we're supposed to be doing them. Because typically when everything is well explained and we're using the same language, we tend to not have as many barriers. So, you know, saying we're going to have an IEP meeting means something different to a parent than it means to a school staff. They just have different roles. And if we're prepared for that and we can, you know, be on the same page going into that, the meetings just seem to go a lot more smoothly. We do see a lot of disagreements regarding behavioral issues and how to handle that.
Mm-hmm.
We see a lot of not understanding what placement means. And that is all across the board. That's lots of people that call in. We get provider calls from doctor's office, and like they said, you know, that they're changing placement. It's like, well, I mean, let's talk about what that could potentially mean versus what we think it means. Our gut check is placement is a specific brick and mortar location.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always what they're meaning. So sometimes we get emotionally invested on both sides, and that not understanding what those things mean is really what causes the miscommunication and the frustration. There's still times where we can't reach that agreement, and mediation, due process are certainly needed. But we've found that it's very, very helpful if everybody is kind of talking the same language and understands what the process is going to look like.
Yeah, I hear you. And I know that when having been there with parents calling who are having issues with their school district and their child and not agreeing with people there, they can spend a good solid hour on the phone explaining that to you.
Sure.
So after having that hour-long conversation, how much can you tell as far as what is needed? And the second part of that question is, if the parent is obviously wanting something that is not good educational practice, do you try to help them through that, or are you just strictly there to support parents no matter what?
So I'm here to make sure everybody understands what the process looks like.
Okay.
I don't go out and meet students There's so many experts on those students in those meetings, the parents obviously being the primary one, but they spend 8 hours a day at school. And so those teachers and those staff, they know those kids in and out. So I don't need to be another expert on the student. So in that initial call, I'm trying to sort out what potential law violations we have. Mm-hmm. Like where did the gap happen? What were things procedurally done the way that they were supposed to? Because if they were, if the entire procedure was followed and we still disagree, then I need to get you over to a legal department. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to talk about what that means. And so I'm looking more for, you know, were the steps followed? And if not, where do we need to go from here to make sure some steps get followed in that process? You know, helping parents understand where things are at. You know, maybe they're in an evaluation period and the school district may not have said to them that it's 60 school days. So they're anxiously awaiting the end of those evaluations. Well, I mean, 60 days and 60 school days is very different. And so we miss things, you know, all the time in the meetings. So I try to help from that point, mm-hmm. like as we are going through an introductory call. I want people to understand what that process should look like more than it matters whether they are right or wrong. There's mm-hmm. no right or wrong in my avenue.
Yeah.
Sometimes we temper expectations. You know, somebody asks for an IEP. You know, last week we had a physician, you know, that was like, I think the student should have an IEP, and we asked for it and they scheduled a meeting for 3 weeks from now. And so helping that physician understand, you know, what that process looks like and that, you know, it's going to be a process. There's going to need to be evaluation and those kinds of things. It really helps put things on a better path when everyone knows, like, what that looks like and what it means. Occasionally we will have someone call in who is asking for something that's not really like realistic, but even then there's a reason they're asking for that. And so if a parent is asking me for something that I think isn't part of the educational, you know, process or special ed, you know, what could we do? Like mm-hmm. where could we make this fit? There really isn't an unreasonable ask, because it usually comes from a place where we want something, right? We want the student to be more supported at school. We want them to be in a, you know, a more safe environment for their behaviors. You know, we want a very core thing that we may not be able to do it exactly how someone wants. But if we go through all the right steps of things, we're going to land at some place that's more agreeable and understandable, as opposed to, you know, fighting all the time and where everybody wants the same thing, but we just say different words.
Yeah. Well, you know, I really appreciate your approach, because I think that it's as you said earlier, it's very emotional for the parent. It's their kid. And the teachers feel just as strongly, but in a different way. And I've said a zillion times that going into an IEP meeting, even a difficult one, you have to go in believing that everybody wants what's best for the kid. It's yeah. just that we don't always agree on what sure. that best thing is. So having a calm head in the picture, explaining what the process is, as opposed to, you know, supporting people's emotional states, is certainly much more productive than other kind of advocates that I've seen in the business. So thank you very much for that. So if people want more information on your services and get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
So the best way to reach out to us is always going to be our website, which is the Illinois Guardianship and Advocacy Commission page. If you search that, it will come up. And then there's a special education initiative tab. But that will give you all the things I talked about today. It will give you a contact number, but also it allows you to submit a form online that will go to our intake division, and then we can sort through that way.
Oh, good. So you don't have to sit on the phone for an hour with each person.
No, you don't have to sit on the phone with, and really the idea is to get you to the best person as quick as possible. Most of the time in special ed, we don't know what that is until we really sit and talk with somebody or have, you know, good dialogue via email even, to really know like what the primary root cause is. So we make sure we get them to the best, you know, person, but we're a smaller agency and we're a small division. So we can navigate that a little quicker via email always than via phone. So that usually results in scheduling a phone call, but it eliminates a lot of the tag back and forth where, you know, someone calls me and then I call them back and I call from a different, you know, area code than what they called into. And it, you know, that is always what is easiest in my opinion, of course.
Right.
But we do have, our agency has a 1-800 number that is on that same website. So you can call and navigate the same kind of thing via the phone if you want.
Yeah. And just to help people understand what that process looks like, then when somebody makes a call, what's the time frame that you need to actually get involved in whatever the case is? If they have a IEP coming up in a week, that probably isn't going to be doable, is it?
It really depends. It depends on the time of year. Like I'm going to try to help as many people as I possibly can. And so when people get to me, you know, we have, if they want a more formal advocacy route, so they don't just want us to answer questions. If they just have a question, they can shoot an email directly to me. I will get to it usually within 24 hours, maybe 48, depending on the time of year. Like if we're real big in the thick of IEP season, you know, that's a little different, but I'm pretty quick about that piece of it. To get a case started, you know, we just need a very limited amount of information. So once someone says that they know they would like an advocate, if they provide to us, whether that be on the website or email, or if they call in, you know, they let us know, then we get them that intake paperwork. And I can usually have someone assigned within 2 to 3 days. Whether or not that person is available at a specific meeting time is hit or miss. We really, really try.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like this time of year with parent-teacher conferences and IEPs being up and running quite heavily, and then in the spring, you know, sometimes we're not able to
crazy.
Make those
yeah.
times work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we really, it really depends. There's no, you know, set or fast. I don't tell people they have to call a week ahead of time. I just say, you know, call me as soon as you can. The quicker we have the paperwork, the quicker I can let you know. If we can get someone assigned and that person isn't available at a meeting time, we can sometimes reach out to school districts and reschedule to a time that works. So we try to do as much as we can with what we have. So I tell people, like, even if you think you might need something, you know, give us a call and we'll navigate it together.
Yeah, I mean, just with questions, you're fine with just getting questions, it sounds like. And there are a lot of parents out there who would just have that need, and that doesn't take that much time.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And via email, that's all day long. In between meetings, I can answer questions as soon as I can get to them. So if questions are what you need, emailing me directly, and my information's on the website as well, but, you know, emailing me directly, I will get back to you as soon as possible. When you do the website, you will get a call back from our paralegal. So either way, you're going to get a pretty quick response for information purposes, for sure.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me today. Laura Hart, Special Education Rights Manager for the Illinois Guardianship and Advocacy Commission. I'll put that website on my Facebook page for Disability Beat Radio. And hopefully, I'm sure you will be getting lots more business over the course of the next few years. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Have a good evening.
You too. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week.
No, I'll stand my ground.
are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM.